Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Mix and match 1 pound strawberries or 6 ounce blueberries, raspberries, or blackberries for $2.99 each when you buy three. Take advantage of this exclusive digital deal. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, $3.97 per pound, limit one package. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
I don't know why, but I thought it was going to be warmer today than it was yesterday. And man, am I wrong. Highs today of 55. Right now it's 40. And then we kind of get on a roller coaster. I wouldn't get the car washed unless you belong to the Wash It As Many Times As You Want Club. And I'm thinking about that, but that's neither here or there. 60% chance for showers tomorrow, 45% on Thursday, 40% Friday, Saturday. Looking really wet. The temperatures rise to Saturday up until 70 degrees, up to 70 degrees. And then Sunday, cold front comes through, 57 for a high. Sunday, 43 for a high on Monday. But hang on, next Tuesday, the high is going to be 33 degrees. The low is going to be 24, so that means freeze precautions. More on that as we get closer and they narrow that forecast down. So how do you get your news? Where do you get your news? What do you know what to believe? Do you care what's true and what's not? Or do you just seek out what you want to know, what you want to be true? Jesse Holcomb joins us now, professor of journalism and communication at Calvin University, also a former associate director of research at the Pew Research Center. Good morning, professor. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good to be with you again, Tommy.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your time. Boy, you want to take us back to what happened with the fight before the holidays with the government shutdown and some of the stuff that was going on with Elon Musk and Twitter?
Well, as many of your listeners probably know, Elon Musk, the entrepreneur and one of the most famous businessmen in the world, household name, has now been elevated to the central core of the federal government. He's going to be running this DOGE office, this new Department of Government Efficiency. Of course, many of your listeners know he is the, I wouldn't say new owner of Twitter anymore, Twitter now X, and has really come to dominate a lot of these conversations in American politics, has actually been able to use his essentially his army of followers on X, the platform that he owns, to kind of pick up their pitchforks and dominate a conversation. And this actually spilled out into real life in Capitol Hill, where he was able to use all these minions essentially to exert control over a spending bill. And that potentially opened the door to a government shutdown several weeks ago. What is concerning to folks like myself and perhaps other people in the news industry and journalists is that there can be some false information that gets out there in these kinds of Twitter storms, and it can drown out the ability of fact-based, nonpartisan journalistic reporting to kind of help us all understand the truth of the matter.
So here's the thing. A longtime politician told me a long time ago that there are leaders, some leaders who call themselves leaders, see which way the crowd is going, then they head in front and they call themselves the leaders. Other people really are leaders and decide which is the right way to go and then try to lead the crowd that way. When you have people that are contacting their representatives and senators in Washington based on false claims about spending bills, things like a NFL stadium in D.C. that proved to be false. It actually prevented that. Musk said the original bill funded a bioweapons lab. It did not. Something about $60 billion for Ukraine, which it didn't appear to. Again, these bills are very complicated issues and very complicated matters, and there's also context and subcontext, and this leads to that, leads to that. It's not simple. At some point, the elected people have to say, okay, that's fine. You can vote for me, you cannot vote for me, but I know what's true and what's not, right?
Well, in theory, and to be sure, there are plenty of leaders who have integrity and the essential traits of leadership who are on Capitol Hill, who know that their job is to take tough votes on bills. And we've got them on both sides of the aisle, mm-hmm. Tommy. But the fact is, I mean, it's human nature, right? If you are getting a pressure campaign on social media, and if you're a lawmaker who spends a lot of time on social media, I think it'd be naive to say that that stuff doesn't have some kind of an effect. Now, that's not to say that there should not be the channels or the ability for the vox populi, right, for citizens to make their voices heard. That's certainly not what I'm saying. However, if you're a lawmaker who is only listening to what's happening on social media, and if there happens to be a really loud and misinformed sort of cantankerous mob on social media, and that's influencing, chiefly influencing your votes, then I'd say that that's reason for concern for our civics.
And I'm all for a vox populi, so long as it's an educated electorate and they know what's true and what's not, and urging their representatives to act or senators to act on what's true and what's not, as opposed to misinformation or, in some cases, disinformation, right?
Right, exactly, and I think the experts would argue that the difference between mis and disinformation is, you know, with the former, it's sort of normal that in the course of things there would be some mistakes that get out there, sort of misinterpretations in good faith of what's in a bill. As you said, these bills can be very complicated and messy, and you know, any news reporter will know that the basic facts of the matter are actually a lot harder to pin down in many cases than we tend to think. Disinformation, on the other hand, is often characterized as a sort of willful manipulation of the facts for self-interested purposes by the actor.
On New Year's Day, I wasn't feeling great, and I was watching a little bit of the Twilight Zone in between the coverage of the Bourbon Street attack, Twilight Zone Marathon, and I caught the episode where they thought Martians were landing, and then one rumor led to the other, and then everybody freaks out. That was made in the 50s, I think, or the 60s. And I got to thinking about the parallel between that and what's going on social media, where people get all revved up over something that's not even true to begin with. I see a parallel here with the Seattle windshield thing that goes back to the 50s. So when we come back, we'll talk about the difference between media and reporters, and while it's true that everybody is perhaps the media because they go on social media and post, that doesn't make them reporters. And also about how do you discern what's true or not when it comes to making an informed choice and being an educated member of the public. We're talking with our friend about what's real, what's not when it comes to news, Jesse Holcomb, a professor of journalism and communication at Calvin University, former associate director of research at the Pew Research Center. 621 traffic now, WWL. 625 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Jesse Holcomb, professor of journalism and communications at Calvin University, former associate director of research at the Pew Research Center, about how do you sort out what's real and what's not online, and who do you trust to give you unbiased news. And Professor, going back to my Twilight Zone example of Maple Street, I think the Martians invade Maple Street. Come to find out, there were actually, with this Twilight Zone episode, Martians behind it, but they were making people freak out by blinking the lights here or turning that off there, which is kind of akin to what happens on social media with trolls and people putting out misinformation or disinformation. So with all that being said, what advice would you give people to I guess, discern what's true and what's not? And I guess the first thing you'd be willing to do is challenge yourself and what you believe, maybe?
Exactly. I think that's right. I once read a quote that kind of stuck with me when it comes to this, which is that we should be curious when we're furious. Okay, so if you're on social media
say that again. That's a great phrase. Say it again.
Be curious when you're furious. And here's what I mean by that. If you're on social media, or forget that, for that matter, watching cable news, and you see something or read something that just gets you hopping mad about politics, about the world these days, about some other group of people or political party, take a pause and take a breath and think to yourself, why am I so mad? Okay? Because the chances are, there's a chance in that kind of situation that you're mad by design. The fact is, Tommy, these social media platforms, and it's not necessarily something nefarious, but they are engineered to keep and hold your attention. Mm-hmm. And one thing we know is that anger, what psychologists would call that kind of arousal, will keep people engaged. Now, it's not necessarily good for us, okay? Sometimes when we get really mad about something, it can blind us to the facts and whether there's something, right? It can fit a preconceived narrative that we have, and so we're going to pay less attention to whether something is entirely true or not. And chances are, if it's making us really mad, maybe it's only presenting one side of the story. Okay. By contrast, I would argue that the thousands of community and local journalists and even national reporters around the country, they're not perfect, but they are trained and incentivized to try to do the best they can to present the clearest version of the truth as we know it about a certain topic or otherwise. They're out there interviewing real people. They're doing real research. They're eyewitnessing events. And, you know, despite their mistakes sometimes, they're incentivized to get it right because they're going to hear about it if they don't.
I had a conversation the other day with a local official about the way something was being reported in the national media as it related to the Bourbon Street attack, and it wasn't accurate. And I just asked people to, you know, consider that when they know maybe something that happened, and it's not necessarily of a nefarious nature, but and Professor, this goes to my, you know, I say the news sometimes should be 15 minutes, sometimes should be 90 minutes. It depends on what's happening, right? Because I think what happens is sometimes you get short shrift paid to things that should be gone into in detail, and then other things become news when they really aren't because you got to fill 30 minutes. And it just seems to me that when it comes to even mainstream media, people need to just remember things that happen locally and remember with limitations when it comes to, I guess, reporting and absolute truth. I guess it goes back to what you said. Be curious and do some digging on your own, right?
Exactly. And thank a local journalist.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. Jesse Holcomb, professor of journalism and communication at Calvin University. Also a former associate research director of research at the Pew Center. Somebody texted in and said, I remember it'd be interesting to go back and look at all of the news reports. Top stories in the past, see what was true. For instance, in the 1990s, all the networks said Miami would be underwater by 2012 due to global warming. Well, that's a fun remembrance, and that's nice to say, but I think maybe somehow it's like the old sitcoms where, you know, it gets all blurry, and well, that's not quite the way I remember it, and I texted back. I'd love to see stories on it. If you got some stories from major media outlets saying Miami was going to be underwater by 2012, I'd like to see them, but I don't really recall that. 6:30, time for WWL First News.